Morning. Today's Daf and Erevin Chav Vav. We are on the bottom of Chav Hey Amud Beis, and Yos Hashem, this morning we're going to be finishing the second parak of the Meseches. We can divide the second parak of Erevin into two parts. The first part of the parak dealt with Paseh Beiros, and that means to say that when traveling to Yerushalayim to do the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel, and stopping along the way in order to stop by a well. So you make an enclosure around the well so that you can draw water from the well onto the area just next to the well. The area next to the well generally was the Rishus HaRabim. And so that would be an Issa D'Oraisa to do so. But the Chachamim allowed for a pseudo-enclosure to be made around that area using four brackets, having four brackets extend one arm in each direction, and the creating at least the outline of an enclosure, and that would serve as a Rishus Yachid. That obviously has to work Minat Torah, as we pointed out in the beginning of the parak, and it is certainly a strange Rishus Yachid, but nevertheless it does work, but its application is extraordinarily limited, as it only applies to those who are Olei Regalim. There was a Rashi that we saw, really the Gemara as well, that we saw going back to Chaf Aleph, that says that not only is it applicable to Olei Regalim, but it's also applicable to heading to Yeshiva. If while traveling to Yeshiva you have to stop along the way and you're stopping on Shabbos, so presumably you could also use the Paseh Beiros as well. And then for the first half of the second parak, we went in and listed the many details of Paseh Beiros that took us from the beginning of the second parak, which takes us all the way back to Yudzayin Amud Beis, and that takes us to the top of Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. The second half of the second parak of Erevin dealt with the principle of Karpov, and that is that I have an enclosure. And that enclosure was originally constructed, put up as a non-residential area. So that is going to be, even though a Rishus HaYachid, nevertheless, rabbinically legislated. One can only carry in that area, but only if that area is no greater than 5,000 square amos. Once that area is greater than 5,000 square amos, so rabbinically one is not allowed to carry in that area. This is what is called a karpuff. With that stated, so we have now, since Daf Chav Gimel, the Mishnah and Chav Gimel, went through a number of different halachas of karpuff. Most of our discussion here has been about the idea of zoning and rezoning. In other words, you had an area that was originally constructed as a non-residential area, so how exactly do we go about making it a residential area? Yesterday also, in addition to having that discussion, we also had a discussion regarding reducing, taking an area and reducing the area so that the area, even though it's not rezoned, it still remains a non-residential area, but it now becomes less than 5,000 square amos, and then you would be allowed to carry in that area. So that has been the discussions that we've had here in the second half of the second parak of Erevin. With that stated, now we start immediately with the Gemara on the bottom of Chaf Amud Beis with the following case. Hahi av Varnaka d'avle l'reish galusa bebustina. So there was an Avarnaka to the Reish Galusa, and it was located in his Bustina. The word Bustina we already saw yesterday, so that means that's describing an orchard. And what he had out there was something which is some sort of structure, and here's what we're going to do this morning. You can see Rashi over here. There's a lot of Rashi coming up on Chavav Amud Aleph, and the reason why is because Rashi takes us through the case that we're about to learn together, and Rashi offers one pshat. And then after offering an entire pshat over here, Rashi then, on Chav Vav Amud Aleph, offers a, not entirely, but mostly new pshat in the case over here. Rashi actually sources this second pshat from the Gaonim, and actually Rashi says that it's really his own preferred pshat. So what I'm going to do this morning is I'm going to take us through this case over here, and I'm going to present it like Rashi's second pshat. So if you would like to follow me somewhat inside, I mean, I'm not going to go through the Rashi inside, but if you would like to follow me, you can take a look at Rashi, Chav Vav Amud Aleph, Divrei HaMaschil LeHara. It's the second wide line of Rashi, where there he starts with the parish of the Tshuvas HaGaonim in terms of explaining exactly what this case is. So in the meantime, however, so I'm going to run through it with that Rashi, with that Rashi's approach. To see another approach within Rashi, so you can go through the Rashis up until that point in time. Although the truth of the matter is that even to get a full appreciation of the Gemara and the scenario and the issues, so you also need to see the first round of Rashis as well, meaning the second Rashi The second Pshat and Rashi assume that you already went through the first Rashis. Okay, anyway, with all that stated, so the Avarnaka, according to the second Pshat and Rashi, is some sort of canopy. Well, first of all, let's go even more macro. The Reish Galusa had a backyard, and like we pointed out already, the backyard is generally speaking a non-residential area, and it was larger than 5,000 square amos. So that means to say that the Reish Galusa was not able to carry in his backyard. People typically back then only accessed the front yard, not the backyard. And so therefore, his backyard area was a restricted karpuf area, not being able to carry in that area, so he turns now to Rav Huna. Rav Huna Bar Chinana, and what he's going to ask him to do is the following. Because he had this canopy area in his backyard, that's the Avarnaka. Rashi describes it as an achsadra, right? Some sort of structure, and it's within the garden. And it's right in the middle of the garden. And the only thing the Reish Galusa wanted to do was be able to carry from his home over to this canopy area. But, however, it was right in the middle of his backyard, and the backyard was a restricted karpuf area. So he turns to Rav Huna Bar Chinana and he asks him to do the following. Let's read the Gemara now inside. Hahu Avarnaka Dehavala L'Reish Galusa. So there was this Avarnaka, this canopy that belonged to the Reish Galusa. Bibustina, it was right in the middle of his orchard that was in his backyard. And again, just to reiterate, it was a restricted karpuf area in his backyard. It was enclosed as a non-residential area. So Amalei Rav Huna Bar Chinana. So he says to Rav Huna Bar Chinana, Le'avin Mar, Tekanta Dlamacher, Nechol Nahama Hasam. So he says to Rav Huna Bar Chinana, look, you're going to be the rabbi. I mean, you are the rabbi. But what you're going to do is that you're going to create some sort of halachic allowance so that tomorrow on Shabbos, what I could do is I could walk out to the canopy and eat some bread over there by the canopy. So you'll figure it out. You'll make sure that I'll be able to get from my house over to the canopy area. So Azol Avad Kana Kana Pachos Mishlosha. Okay, so Rav Huna Bar Chinana said fine. And so as per the instructions, so what did he do? So he created an allowance. What exactly did he do? So he created basically a fence. Vertical reed followed by vertical reed. Each of the reeds have less than a gap of 3 tefachim between them. And now basically what he did is he constructed new walls, a pathway of walls that took him from the house of the Reish Galusa over to the canopy. And so basically you had almost like a built-in tunnel. It wasn't underground, but you had a enclosed area now, a newly enclosed area, but just a pathway to get him from the house over to the canopy and able to get back. So this is what Rav Huna did in order so that Reish Galusa now can get back and forth on Shabbos. Azol Rava. As we are now turning to the top of Chavav Amud Aleph, along comes Rava. And Rava says, well, he doesn't say anything, but he does something. And clearly what he's going to do, so let's first read inside. Azol Rava Shafinu. And Rava now takes each one of the vertical poles and plucks them out of the ground before Shabbos. Reasons why we're going to explain in just a moment. And as Rav Papa Rav Huna Berei de Rav Yeshua Naktinu Me Basrei. And Rav Papa and Rav Huna Berei de Rav Yeshua are following Rava. And basically, Rava just simply pulled the vertical poles out of the ground. And his two students, Rav Papa and Rav Huna Berei de Rav Yeshua, collected the poles to make sure that the poles were not going to be reinserted. Okay, so basically, if you will, Rav Huna was constructing. And Rava, together with his students, was deconstructing. So what's going on over here? So again, Rashi, quoting the Gaonim, says, at first Rava thought that these poles were perfectly unnecessary. And if you want to see the Rashi inside, Rashi says, Rashi is the very first wide line in this long Rashi over here. The Rava, Rashi is on Chavav Amadav. Rava, Kishafinu, Lola Esser Elalahaka Olav. So Rava did not come here in order to create problems, but actually I take that back. He did create problems, and we'll see in just a moment. The Reish Galusa was really unhappy with Rava, but his original intention over here was to be of help because he thought that the vertical poles were perfectly unnecessary. This sphere to Charlotte to Libikula Bustana, because Rava was of the opinion that there didn't need to be any kind of adjustment of the backyard karpuf. This orchard that was in the backyard of the Reish Galusa, so it was already as it is, not restricted. The Kevin de Banale Avarnaka Bustana, because remember, what did the Reish Galusa have right in the middle of the orchard? what he had in the middle of the orchard was this canopy. So Shavya Lakula Bustana Chatzer LaAvarnika. So because there was a canopy in this area, so that canopy basically has converted it into a residential area. Meaning this canopy is where the Reish Galusa enjoyed being in. So therefore, it makes it now for residential purposes. And so the entire area now is considered residential. So despite the fact that it was larger than 5,000 square amas in total, but because of the canopy that was right there in the center, so therefore Rava felt that this is a residential area, and therefore the Reish Galusa can carry in the area, and there's no need for this halachic pathway that was created by Rav Huna. And Rashi goes on to say, Vave Mukha Fadira, and therefore it was encircled for residential purposes. The entire area was enclosed for residential purposes. No need for the pathway. This was the thinking of Rava when he was pulling it out. Now, why didn't he just simply communicate to Rav Huna? Why did he forcefully pull the poles out of the ground? Okay, he got, and God forbid, I should say this with any kind of judgment, but he got a little carried away. Meaning, so he went ahead and he pulled the poles out of the ground without communicating that he didn't feel that they were necessary. Maybe Rav Huna wouldn't have listened to Rava, but at this point in time, I'm only guessing and I'm only speculating. But here now comes the problems. As we now turn back to the Gemara, you could put your finger right there on that point in Rashi, because we're going to come back to that point in Rashi in just a moment. But now we head back to the Gemara. We are now two lines down on Chavav Amar Aleph. Limachar, and the very next day. The very next day, Eisve Ravina LaRava. So Ravina challenges Rava, meaning that now what we're going to have a discussion between these Talmidim of Rava in terms of whether or not Rava was right with his presumption. Let's remind each other. Rava pulled out the pathway because he felt it was unnecessary, because he felt that the entire enclosure was hukaf ladira, it was residential. And therefore there was no restriction in carrying in that area. So now what the students of Rava are going to do is they're going to turn to Rava and say, I don't think you're right. I think Rav Huna was right. I think that there needed to be a halachic pathway constructed in order so that the Reish Galusa would be able to carry his canopy. And here now, three rounds of students turning to Rav and saying, Rav Huna seems to be more correct, and I don't think you're right. And number one, so the first question that was posed from Ravina to Rav is based on the Braisa Yir Chadasha. When you have a new city, Modedin La, Mi Yeshiva Sa, you are going to be measuring it from where you are settled, v'yishana mechol masa. However, if it's an old city, you're measuring it from the wall. What is being discussed over here in this braisa? A ruve tchumim. That means to say that you can only walk 2,000 amos on Shabbos past your makom shvisa. We touched on this already a couple of times. This will be discussed in much greater detail later in the Masechta. But in the meantime, where are you measuring from? So it depends on the wall of the city came before the actual settlement of the city, or did the settlement of the city come before the wall? So if it's a chadasha, you measure from where you are actually settled. If it's an old city, you measure from the wall. Explanation, let's read on in the Braisa. Ezu chadasha ve'ezu yishana chadasha she'ukvalu v'sof yavsha. So a new city is where first the wall was constructed, and then afterwards it was settled. Meaning that the wall, when originally set up, was not for the purposes of putting a perimeter around the city. It was just simply a wall that was put up. The fact that the city came later cannot change the status of the wall. And that means to say now that the wall is considered vis-a-vis the measuring of Tchum inconsequential. However, Yashva Levesof Hukva, what's considered an old city? First the city was settled, then a wall was built around the city. The construction of that wall clearly was for the purpose of the city. Meaning the wall in that case was there, originally constructed for the perimeter of the city. Now that the wall was created for the city, so now the city limits are in fact the wall. And so what you see over here is something very clear. And that is, it depends whether or not what came first. City came first or wall came first. If you have city followed by wall, the wall is a perimeter for the city. If you have wall, follow them by city afterwards, so the wall was not built for the city, and so therefore the wall is not considered part and parcel of the city. And despite the fact, here's the critical point, and despite the fact that a city was eventually built within the wall, nevertheless, the wall cannot change its status. The wall remains a wall that was not originally built for the city, and we're not measuring from the wall. Hachanami, sorry, Hainami. Same thing over here, says Ravina to Rava. Look, the canopy only came at a later point in time. Meaning this orchard of the Reish Galusa, so the walls that were there were originally constructed with no canopy in the center. And so therefore, when the walls were constructed, it was a non-residential. You can't just simply put a canopy down in the middle and now declare, oh, these walls, which originally were put up as non-residential, are now going to be residential walls. It doesn't work that way. If you want to rezone, you have to go back to what we learned earlier, yesterday, the day before, Daf Chaf Dalet, Daf Chaf Hey, where you have to break the wall. You have to then remake the wall. You have to put a breach in the wall, etc., etc. But just to put a canopy down in the center, that's not going to change the zoning of the walls. So that is point number one. Point number two. Amalei Rav Papa LaRava, so along comes Rav Papa to Rava. Another student to Rava and says, I also think that what your position is not correct. V'amar Rav Asi mechitza, adrachlin, lo shma mechitza. If I have a mechitza, but it's only there for privacy purposes, meaning that right now we're constructing, right? Anytime you go to a construction site, so what they're going to do is they're going to put up these makeshift walls so that nobody sees what's going on to provide a little bit of privacy. Halachically, they're not walls. And over here, the whole purpose of the walls that were put up over here for the orchard were just simply privacy walls. And so therefore, these are not considered permanent. Sorry, let me go back. Let me state that better. Now, the walls of the orchard are fine. The walls, the makeshift walls that were put up by Rava, so those are just simply privacy walls. Those aren't actual walls, meaning you didn't put them up in order for that they stay a long time, and so therefore they don't have the halachic status of walls. That is the second point that was raised against Rava. Ama, and I'm just reading in the Gemara, Kevin Delitz Niusa Avide, Le Lohavia Mechitza. Hachanami, Kevin Delitz Niusa Avide, Lohavia Mechitza. So the walls that were put up were just for the purposes of Snius, and therefore it's not going to be a Mechitza. And finally, number three, Vamrev Hunabre Dev Yeshua La Rava. Now a third student approaches Rava and says to Rava, once again, You pull the vertical poles down because you thought that the larger area was a residential area, and so this is now going to be the third challenge on that presumption, and that is va'amar avuna mechitza ha'asuyu l'nachas l'shma mechitza. So the Gemara says that as another principle regarding walls, if the whole purpose of the walls is only l'nachas, now we have in our girsa ha'asuyu l'nachas, or the other girsa is eino asuyu l'nachas. Whatever the girsa is, the way Rashi understands it, is that if the whole purpose of the walls is just to protect something, meaning it is not there to serve the enclosure itself, but it's just there to protect something. I'll give you an example. The Gemara is going to give an example. So that when Rava Baravua made an Erev for the town of Mechuza, so he did not make an Erev around the entire town of Mechuza. And as Rashi points out over here, even though in theory you could, the town of Mechuza wasn't that large. There weren't 600,000 people going through the thoroughfare in Mechuza. This is Rashi Lishita So. We saw Rashi back in Davav here in Erevin. We saw Rashi also in Davav in Shabbos, where Rashi says, in order to be a Rishus HaRabim, so it must be that you not only have the main thoroughfare running through the town being 16 amas wide, but you have to have 600,000 people in that going through that street, or maybe otherwise stated in that town. But that wasn't the case in Mechuza, and in theory you could make an Erev for the entirety of Mechuza, but the way that he did it is that he only made an Erev, he only made an Erev basically different parts of Mechuza, if you will, different developments of Mechuza. And the reason why is Mishum Pera de Beiture. Now, and it's because of the walls that were created around these areas. These areas over here, you could see Rashi giving some sort of description of what it looks like. If you have a picture book, you're going to see it even better. But anyway, there were walls that were surrounding the larger area of Mechuza, but the only purpose of these walls is in order to make sure that the Peire de Beiture, now they are date pits that were set aside for the animals. In other words, you had these basically channels where the day pits were put in, Walls were put around these areas, but only to protect the date pits. Meaning these walls were not created for enclosure purposes. They were there just for the protection of the date pits. And the halacha is that they are not regarded as walls. And so since they are not regarded halachically as walls, since they are not primarily put up for enclosure purposes, so therefore we cannot look at the town of Mechuza as encircled by a wall, even though physically they were encircled by the wall, but the only purpose for these walls was only to protect the dates and not to provide enclosure for the entire city. So the Gemara says, "Va'aper de beitura kimechitza ha'asuya l'nachas damya." And so the Gemara says, I'll say the same thing over here, that the purpose of these walls that were created around the larger orchard perimeter is only for the purpose of the protection of the orchard, and they're not there for the purposes of enclosure, and so therefore, halachically, they're not considered walls. They're not going to create residence within the interior of those walls. And so, you had three different students all approaching Rav and saying to Rav, look, we think Rav Huna was right. You do need now an additional pathway in order for the Reish Galusa to go from his house into his canopy, which is centered right in the middle of his orchard. And what your thought process was in that it was not necessary. And on top of that, you actually pulled out the poles from the ground. So the next day, meaning on Shabbos itself, each one of the students approached Rava and said to Rava, look, we rethought your position and we think that you're wrong. And Rava didn't respond to any of the three challenges, which seems to indicate that Rava acknowledged that his students were right. And so comes along Shabbos now, and he's got the worst news to tell Rav Huna and the Reish Galusa. Imagine Rava's predicament right now, where he's got to approach Rava and Reish Galusa and say, look, approach Rav Huna and the Reish Galusa and say, look, Reish Galusa, I know that you instructed Rav Huna to allow you to go from your house to the canopy, which is in the middle of the orchard. And I know that Rav Huna made a pathway in order for you to be able to walk. But here's what I did. Oh boy, this is some admission. Number one, I pulled out the vertical poles before Shabbos because I thought they were unnecessary. Then, after much more consideration and after consulting with my students, so I then realized that Rav Huna was really right and the poles really needed to be there. And now, I can't imagine how comfortable this was. And now, Reish Galusa, you're now in a position where you're not able to walk from your house to the canopy and have a great Shabbos. Okay. Anyway, and Reish Galusa, understandably, was irate. Kari alei Reish Galusa, when Reish Galusa heard the news, so he said the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Chachamim hema lehara ulehetiv lo yadau. What a bunch of Chachamim. Now, he's quoting the pasuk out of context, but what a bunch of Chachamim. All they know is how to create problems, ulehetiv lo yadu, but they're not benefiting me, or all their wisdom and all their Chachma, and all they can do is just simply create problems and not solutions. Understandably, the Reish Galusa was irate. Okay. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the case of the Bustina and the Avarnica. And everything I just presented was Lefi Shitas Rashi, as presented over here in Chavav Amin Aleph, for a different way to go over it. So you can see the Rashis from the beginning of the Sukkah up until now. But the way I just presented it is Rashi's preferred pshat. And if you want to see more on this topic, so Tosos also has a way to present it, similar to the Rashi, second pshat that I just offered in the name of the Gaonim, with some differences. Anyway, we're going to go on in the Gemara. We're in Chavav Amin Aleph. We're halfway down on the Amud, and we continue Amar Rav Elai Shemati Mir Rav Elazar Aviafilu Beis Kor. Okay, so we go back to our Mishnah, which takes us all the way back to Daf Chav Gimel, and there the Mishnah presented to us three things that Rabbi Elai heard from Rabbi Eliezer. Looked for corroboration on all three things. Did not receive any corroboration. The first thing that he heard from Rabbi Eliezer is that regardless how large our non-residential enclosure is, there never is a restriction. It could be up to a core area. A core is 30 sa'ah. We already pointed out 2 sa'ah is equivalent to 5,000 square amas. So now 30 sa'ah is going to be 15 times greater. So 15 times greater than 5,000, hopefully my math is good today, 75,000 square amas. You can have an enclosure, a non-residential enclosure that large. And Rabbi Eli heard from Rabbi Eliezer that that's going to be acceptable and there are no restrictions. And what the Gemara now is going to do is discuss another version of the statement that was attributed to Rabbi Eliezer. So Amar Rabbi Eli Shemati Mer Rabbi Eliezer Vafilo Beis Kor Masnis Ndolo Kechananya. So our mission is not going like Chananya, Detanya. We learned in the Brisa Chananya Amar Afilo Hi Arba'im Sa'a Ke Astratya Shel Melech. So here in this Braisa, Chananya says that even if it was 40 sa'ah, like the astracha of the king, as we'll talk in just a moment, it's some sort of courtyard of the king, non-residential courtyard of the king, as we'll point out in just a moment. Anyway, it's a subtle discrepancy, but it's still discrepancy, in that Rabbi Eliezer was quoted as saying, afilu shloshim, it could be 30 sa'ah, and here in this braisa it's 40 sa'ah. So I'm Rav Yochanan, Shnei Mikra, Echad Darshu. Rav Yochanan says that these positions were actually derived from a pasuk. Shenamah, the pasuk says, Vayi Yishayahu lo yatsa el chatzer hatichona. Yishayahu did not even get out to the chatzer tichona. Now I'll give the background to the pasuk here in just a moment. V'chatzer tichona, so that's talking about the courtyard, but the non-residential courtyard, Rashi says, the tichona, clearly over here, is talking about behind the palace, not in front of the palace. Now, in terms of the Kriyin Ksiv, this is an interesting one. So, Ksiv Ha'ir. So, in terms of the way it is written, the word is Ha'ir, and the Kri is a totally different word. Notably, the Kri is Chatzer. Okay, so it's an interesting Kriyin Ksiv. And so what is the Kriyin Ksiv trying to communicate to us? Mikan listracha shamelach she'ayuk ke'ayaros beinonias. So as far as the Kriyin Ksiv is coming to teach us that the backyard of the king is as small as a small city. Or better explained, better translated, mid-sized city. B'maikim eflugim marsavar ayaros beinonias avyan base core. U'marsavar mem sa avyan. And then the debate is, how large is an ayaros beinonios? So it's either 30 or 40 sa'ah. Anyway, what comes out over here is that the debate between the Rabbi Eliezer of the Mishnah and Rabbi Chananya of the Braisa is just simply what is the size of a mid-sized city, where the Navi puts that as equivalent to the backyard of the king's palace. Ad Khan. And the point is, sorry, and the point is that even though, despite the fact that the backyard of the king's palace is a non-residential area, but the Navi equates it with a chatzer, that's the Kriyuk Siv, right? It says ir and the Ksiv is chatzer, sorry, and the Kri is chatzer. So since the Navi equates the two, so that means to say that we're going to give it a chatzer status. Obviously, the chatzer you can carry in, so too can you carry in the enclosure that was non-residential, despite the fact that it's upwards of 30 to 40 sa'ah large. Okay, and just quickly, now let's go a little bit over the background of what's going on over here. We're in Malachim Beis. We're in the 20th parak of Malachim Beis. Chizkiyahu is sick. Chizkiyahu Melech Yisrael is the king of Yehuda, and Tzadik Gamor, father was a Rasha, his son was a Rasha, but nevertheless Chizkiyahu himself was a Tzadik, and he was told by the Navi that he was going to die. Reason being is that he did not want to have children. He learned through Nevuah that his child, notably his son, was Menashe, was going to be a Rasha. Now, in of itself, by the way, as we've gone over numerous times, it's very difficult to understand how we can predict that the child is going to be a Rasha, but nevertheless, that's the information that was given to him. And so therefore, he figured, rather than having a son who was going to be a Rasha, so he just simply would not have a child being burdened with this information, so he decided not to have a child. And the Navi says to him, that's the wrong decision. As far as the future, as far as what the future holds, that's for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to resolve. As far as you're concerned, you have a mitzvah peruvu. You didn't fulfill the mitzvah, so the Navi says to him, you're going to die. And so he davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he'd be given an extension. The Navi goes on to report that he was in fact given an extension, 15 years, in which he did have a child, and the rest, as they say, is history. Anyway, and this is where we're at the point in the Navi where Yishayahu is paying a visit to Chizkiyahu. Yishayahu the Navi is paying a visit to Chizkiyahu and giving him the news that he was going to die. And Yishayahu my bai hasam. So over here, the Gemara now just wants to spend just a moment talking a little bit more about this episode. What was Yishayahu doing over there? To which the Gemara's response, Amarava Barav Chana, Amarav Yochan Malamed, Shechala Chizkiyahu. So Chizkiyahu got very sick, as we just went over. V'halach Yishayahu, v'hoshiv yeshiva apischo. And what Yishayahu did is he set up a yeshiva right in front of the palace. And through the schus of the limud HaTorah that was set up, so Yishayahu should have a refuah shlema. Now, mikan l'tamachachem shechaloshem oshivin yeshiva al pischam. So the Gemara says, okay, so we could draw a conclusion that when you have a tamachachem who gets sick, so what you should do is you should put up a yeshiva by the entrance, and that should provide the schos, much like we see regarding what Yeshayahu did on behalf of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. To which the Gemara says, v'lam milsehi. Then the Gemara says, now, as much as Yeshayahu did it, the Gemara says, not recommended. Duma asu li'iguriyeh be satan. Because all you're doing is that you're inciting the satan. Meaning what you're doing is you're clearly combating the satan head on. And it's a little bit difficult to understand because, okay, meaning, obviously, but presumably this chosatara will go ahead and override that. So it's not perfectly clear why it is that you're instigating the satan. The satan is clearly already having his way, so to say. But nevertheless, the Gemara says it's simply not recommended. And so fine. So anyway, so that's what Yeshayahu was doing over there. We are now prepared to continue. There were three statements in the Mishnah that were made by Rabbi Eli that he heard in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, one having to do with the size of the non-residential enclosure. And despite the fact that it was huge, it was enormous, one is allowed to carry in that area, good. And then the Braisa that we just went through in the Gemara, so the discrepancy of how enormous are we talking about, was it upwards of 30 saw, was it upwards of 40 saw? Next statement that was made by Rabbi Eli in the name of Rabbi Eliezer is the person who did not contribute to the Eruv. And so for just a moment now, we're going to be talking about Eruv Echatzeros in some depth. So here, now before we get to the contrasting Mishnah, the Mishnah is coming up later in the Masechta, Daf Samach Tesamud Beis. So before we see the Mishnah, so let's go over the basics in terms of understanding what is that issue over here. In order for an Eruv to work, so that means to say, aside from obviously having a perimeter put around us, meaning being in a Rishus Yachid, so every member of the Chatzar has to make a contribution. Everyone will contribute bread before Shabbos, so that what we're going to do now is be me'arev. We're going to unify everybody. So now that the Chatzar is no longer considered as an entity, as an area that's owned by multiple residences, but rather now it is one residence. That is what the Chatzar does, so it unifies. Now, going into Shabbos, everyone's got to make a contribution. And let's say we have a scenario in which one person did not make a contribution. One person whose home abuts this particular chatzir did not make a contribution to the chatzir. So now on Shabbos itself, without any remedy, so now we are stuck. Nobody in the chatzir is allowed to carry from the house to the chatzir, from the chatzir back to their house, because the chatzir has not been unified because of this one person. All is not lost. What this one person can do and should do is be mevatel rishus. What he should do is he should withdraw from his rights to the chatzir, so that now when he has withdrawn his rights from the chatzir, so he no longer is considered a shareholder of the chatzir for that Shabbos, and so therefore it is unified amongst the rest of the members of the chatzir. Now, being that he has withdrawn himself from the chatzir on Shabbos, that's what's called bitul harishus, so now he will not be able to carry from his house into the chatzir, because the chatzir no longer is his for the balance of Shabbos. He's withdrawn from it. He's been mevatel rishus. Okay, and now, what's that issue over here? Everything I said up until now, that's just basics. Now, from this point going forward, what's that issue over here? And that is the other members of the chatzir. And so what Rabbi Eli heard from Rabbi Eliezer, that vis-a-vis the other members of the chatzir, so his house is going to be prohibited for him to take things out of his house into the chatzir, or to take things from the chatzir back into his house. However, if you go back to the Mishnah, he said, vis-a-vis everybody else within the chatzir, so asum l'achmas malos is lo, aval lehem mutter. What everybody else can do is that everybody else can carry from the chatzir into that person's house, the person who was mevatel rishus. That's what we learned in the Mishnah for reasons which we're going to explain in just a moment. But before we explain the reasons of Rabbi Eliezer of our Mishnah, we're going to contrast it with another Mishnah, the Mishnah coming up later on Samech Tes. The Mishnah writes, V'atanan beso asa lahotzi lahaknes lo v'lahen. The Mishnah describing the exact scenario that we just described and describing our person who was mevatel as rishus. So the Mishnah says that nobody in the chatzir, no shareholder of the chatzir is allowed to carry from the chatzir into that person's house, the person who was mevatel rishos. Neither he can't do it, nor any other member of the chatzah can do it as well. Now, Amar of Unabereder of Yeshua, Amar of Sheshes Lokasha. So as far as the discrepancy between the Mishnah later on and our Mishnah, so it's very simple. As we turn to the top of Amud Beis, HaRebi Eliezer v'HaRabbanan. So it's just simply a discrepancy of whose position are we following. Our Mishnah is following Shita's Rabbi Eliezer. The Mishnah later on is following the Shita of the Chachamim, and the Gemara says, and that's the Yesod HaMachlokas. What is the Yesod HaMachlokas? So as we continue now in the Gemara, Kishatim Selam, L'Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, Amavalt Rishus, Chatzer Rishus, Beso Bitel. And it means to say as follows, according to Rabbi Eliezer, when that person who didn't make his contribution to the Eruv, so he wants to make good now, and allow everybody to carry within the Chatzer, so very good. So now what he's doing is he's going to withdraw, he's going to relinquish his rights to the Chatzar on Shabbos, he's going to be Mevatel Rishos. When that individual is Mevatel Rishos, according to Rabbi Eliezer, what does he do? Or I should say better, how does he do so? He does so Belev Shalem. He does so Be'ayin Yafeh. He's very generous about it. Not only am I relinquishing this Shabbos, my rights to the Chatzar, truth of the matter is I'm withdrawing myself from my house as well. Meaning I'm basically going to be, for this Shabbos, for the balance of the Shabbos, I will be a guest within my house. And so therefore, his withdrawal is a full withdrawal. He secedes not only of himself from the chatzir, but even from his very own house as well. It's a little bit strange, but according to Rabbi Eliezer, that's the default setting of a person who's mevatel rishus. So now, in terms of his house, what really is his house for the balance of Shabbos? His house is nothing more than just simply an extension of the chatzir. Perfect. Now we understand, Shitas Rabbi Eliezer. Everybody else within the chatzar is allowed to carry, not only throughout the chatzar, because again, now the chatzar is unified. This person who didn't make the contribution withdrew himself from the chatzar, but furthermore, they can even go into that person's house, carrying into that person's house, because his withdrawal not only was a withdrawal from the chatzar, but even from the house as well. That's Shitas Rabbi Eliezer, that when the person is mevatel, he does so be'ayin yafeh. Masha'enkin, according to the Chachamim, as we continue in the Gemara, L'Rabbanan Mevatel Rishus Chatzer Rishus Beis Olo Bitel. The Chachamim's position is that the withdrawal is only from the Chatzer, but not from the house. And so that means to say now that his house has been retained by this person, and so therefore, his house is not considered now just simply an extension of the Chatzer. His house remains his house. And that, of course, means nobody can carry from the Chatzer into his house, because the Chatzer and his house are two separate entities. They are two different reshuyos. Good. So the Gemara says, good. When all said and done, we didn't really give any kind of significant explanation of the positions. The Gemara is a little bit bothered right now because what we said up until now is pretty rudimentary. Pshita, the Gemara says, this is all obvious. So Amar Rachva, Ana, Viravhuna, Barchinana, Tirgamina. So along comes Rachva or Rava and Rav Huna, and they say, well, truth of the matter is that based on the explanation we just gave, we'll even go one step further. Five people who are all in the same chatzer, meaning to say that they have a house abutting the same chatzer, and one of the five did not make a contribution to the chatzer, to the Eruv. And so now, what does he do on that Shabbos? So he has to be Mevatel Rishus. And now we can go even one step further. Lid divrei Rabbi Eliezer kushum avatel reshuso ain't sarach levatel lechol echad ve'echad. Bitul reshus only has to be done one time and only to one other member of the chatzer. Why? So here now we get the extension. Since according to Rabbi Eliezer, the bitul reshus was a magnanimous bitul where he did so belev shalem. So the fact that he did it only to one other member is sufficient, because since his bitul was such a huge withdrawal, where he withdrew himself not only from the chatzar, but from the house as well, so he only need to do it one time, and only to one member, and that would be sufficient. But according to the Chachamim, his bitul, his withdrawal, is done with precision, meaning he's only withdrawing himself from the chatzar, but not from his own home. And so therefore, we're extending the shita of the Chachamim, and we are saying that in addition to what he's being mevatel, we're also concluding that when he is mevatel, he has to go to each one of the other members of the Chatzer and say to each one, I'm mevatel reshus. Because since his bitul is done not with generosity, but rather it's done with precision. He is very precise, so not only is he precise in terms of which sections he's withdrawing himself from, but who he's withdrawing himself from, and therefore he has to go to each and every of the other four members of the chatzir and tell them that he's withdrawing from he's withdrawing himself. Keman Azla had the Tanya, the Gemara says, great, now that we know all this, let's learn a brisa together. Let's give proper attribution of who the author of the brisa is. Chamisha Shashrum Bechatzer Echav Eshachachachem Ehem Velo Irev. Kishu Mevatel Rishus Oin Tzarech Levatel Rishus Lechol Echav Echad. So the brisa says that when a person's Mevatel Rishus, he does not have to do so to each and every member individually who is sharing this Chatzer. He just simply needs to do it once to one member. That's sufficient. So now, after learning what we just learned, that brisa is authored by Keman Kirebi Eliezer. Perfect. And Rav Kahana Masni Hachi, now the way we just said the brisa over, that was the version of Rav Kahana. Now Rav Tivyumi Masni Hachi, Rav Tivyumi has a slightly different girsa, has a slightly different nusach. And that is Keman Azla Adetayinla. So let's start again now in this next nusach, which is we're going to first start off with the brisa. Hey Shri Shruyim Bechazer Echa V'shachachachem Ehem Velo Irev Kishu Mevatu Rishuso Ein Asarach Levatu Rishuso Chol Echa V'echad. So the brisa starts off exactly as we just got done saying, which is that the person who is Mevatu Rishus must do so for every member, every other member of the Chatzar. Keman, and who is that going like Amar Rav Huna Bar Yehuda, Amar Rav Sheshes, Keman Kerav Eliezer. In the second version, it is Rav Sheshes who is the one who is responding that the author of the Brisa is, in fact, Rebbe Eliezer. Really, it comes out to be the same. It's just a question of who is the one who gave attribution of the Brisa that the Brisa is Rebbe Eliezer. In the second version, it's Rav Sheshes who gives that explanation. We are almost done. Just one more topic to cover, but we're going to quickly talk about Mara, but very quickly. One more topic to cover within this discussion of Bittul Rishus, and that is the following discussion. Amalei Rav Papa La Abaye, Li Rebbe Eliezer Yamar Lo Mevatlina, Ula Rabbanan Yamar Mevatlinan My Time Mevatlinan. And so the question that is posed by Rav Papa to Abaye is the following. What's the default setting for Rebbe Eliezer when a person's mevatel rishus? He's mevatel, he's withdrawing himself, not only from the chatzar, but also from his home as well. And the way we're going to ask the question is as follows. Does that mean that according to Rebbe Eliezer, is that just simply the default setting of a person? And that means to say that when you're withdrawing yourself from chatzar and from home, but that's only because that's the default setting. But let's say according to Rebbe Eliezer, the person goes out of his way to say, I'm only withdrawing from the chatzar, but not from my home. Is that going to be successful, according to Rebbe Eliezer? And we can ask the same exact question according to the Chachamim. For the Chachamim, the default setting is that a person is only withdrawing himself from the chatzar, not from his home. But let's say a person wants to withdraw also from his home as well. May he do so according to the Chachamim. Okay, so, my time with the Rebbe Eliezer. And so the Gemara says, what really is that core over here is a better understanding of Rebbe Eliezer. So, is the reason behind Rebbe Eliezer, like I just got done saying, default setting? Meaning that typically, the umdana, the way we approximate a person and his generosity in how much he's withdrawing, he's removing himself to the other members of the chatzar, is that it's both his rights to the courtyard and his home. But if he wants to, if he wants to make an exception for this particular Shabbos and only withdraw himself from the chatzar, he may do so. Or the other possibility is that no. Meaning for Rebbe Eliezer, maybe it's a svara. And the svara is that a person does not have a home without a courtyard. A home and courtyard are really a tandem. It is really a package deal. And so that means to say that, according to Rebbe Eliezer, it's just simply impossible for him to withdraw himself from the courtyard without also withdrawing himself from his home as well. And so therefore, it's not within his ability to separate the courtyard and his home. And maybe the svara behind Rebbe Eliezer is that with a withdrawal from the courtyard is by definition also going to be a withdrawal from his home. And obviously that means to say that that cannot be broken up. That is a question we're asking within Rebbe Eliezer. And we're going to ask basically the same question within the Chachamim. Ula Rabbanan Yamar Mevatlina, my time at the Rabbanan Mishum de Kasavre Mevatl Rishos Chatzer, Rishos Bita Lo Bita, Vahayamar Mevatlina. So according to the Chachamim, is it again just a set question of default setting? that the default of a person is that he withdraws himself from the chatzar, but not from his home. However, if the person articulates and clearly stipulates that he's withdrawing himself from both chatzar and from his house, that would be effective. Or the other possibility, according to the Chachamim, is that the withdrawal from a person's own home is perfectly abnormal behavior. Nobody's just simply giving up his home under any circumstance. What does that mean? I'm going to be a guest in my own house? That's ridiculous. And even for the person who claims that he's doing so, that person's intent is so bizarre. It's such a strange interest. To give up the rights to your own home, that basically the halacha ignores that person, and the person is not going to be mevatel rishus of his very own home. And so therefore, it's just simply not within his power, because this is just such a bizarre, it's such a foreign thought, that a person is going to be mevatel rishus of his very own home, and he simply does not have the power to do so. So the Gemara says, good. So we have just asked a question for Rabbi Eliezer, and according to the Chachamim, for Rabbi Eliezer, is it the pshat that a person typically withdraws from chatzar and home, but he may override that, or that no. Somehow the two of them go hand in hand. And the same question we're asking to the Chachamim, when you're withdrawing from the chatzar, and that does that mean typically you're not withdrawing from your home, but if you stipulate, you may do so, or no, the person cannot be mevatel his home on Shabbos, period. Answer, says the Gemara, so Amalei Bein L'Rabban, Bein L'Rabbi Elazar, Kevin D'Gali Daite Gali. So the answer is very simple. These are default settings that are set by Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. And if a person wants to stipulate and override the default settings, he may in fact do so. And the last thing mentioned in the Mishnah from Rabbi Eliezer, vis-a-vis the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, that if a person wants to eat the Arkavlin on Pesach to fulfill the mitzvah of Achilas Maror, so he may in fact do so, even though, as we pointed out when we learned the Mishnah, this is not one of the Mine Maror that's mentioned in the Gemara Pesachim. The Gemara Pesachim, Daf Lamites, goes over the five different vegetables that qualify as Maror, and this said over in the name of Rabbi Eliezer is another type that would work. What is it? So you can see Rashi over here, the last Rashi before the next perek. Siv ava hagado saviv adekel. Some sort of thick band, a root, so to say, that grows around the palm tree. Okay, not familiar with what Rashi is describing over here, but anyway, it's like lule gefanim. It's like a soft vine, which apparently was edible and apparently very bitter. Anyway, it doesn't qualify. The Gemara over here does not discuss why it's not qualified. So all the Gemara does is just help us in terms of identifying what it is. V'chein shamati mimenu sheyotzim be'arkavlin be'pesach, ma'arkavlin amarish lakish atzvasa charuzisa. Okay, and see the Rashi that we just went through in terms of identifying what it is. Tosfos disagrees. Anyway, hadralach osim pasim. This is the end of the second parak of Erevin. This is where we're going to stop. And let's quickly review. Our first topic of today was an episode with the Reish Galusa and Rav Huna. Reish Galusa instructed Rav Huna before Shabbos, I have a back lot. It is a carp of Shalahukaf Ladira. There is a canopy right in the center. I want to be able to walk from my house, not only walk from my house, but carry some a snack over right to the canopy on Shabbos. And he says to Rav Huna, make it happen. And so what Rav Huna did before Shabbos is that he laid out a fence from the home over to the canopy, and basically this pathway created a halachically new entity, so that now he's no longer walking through the canopy, he's no longer walking through the orchard, he's now walking through the pathway. That's what Rav Huna did. And then what Rava did before Shabbos is he pulled it out. The way Rashi explains it, B'Shem HaGaonim, which this morning was the only way that I presented it, there are other ways to present it. This is Rashi's preferred explanation. Rava pulled out the poles before Shabbos because Rava originally thought going into Shabbos, the poles were unnecessary. He felt that because there was a canopy right in the middle of the orchard, so the walls around the orchard are considered residential walls. It's hukaf l'dira, and so therefore he was of the opinion that what we're looking at over here is an area of residence. And therefore, there is no restriction. You can carry in that area. Rava thought that the pathway was just simply unnecessary. And then what happens on Shabbos? So, just disaster. Each one of the students approached Rav and said, Rav, we think Rav Huna was right. We think those polls were necessary. And each one of them posed a question. Question number one had to do with the fact that first the walls of the orchard went up, and then only afterwards the canopy was set up. That cannot rezone the area. Question number two is that the walls that were set up around were only walls of modesty, and those don't have halachic status of walls. Question number three is that the walls over there were just to protect the orchard and not really to create an enclosed area. And if all the walls are doing is just simply providing protection for an item, but not for an actual enclosure, so that also halachically is not considered a wall. And so therefore, with each one of the questions, Rava comes to the realization that Rav Huna was right. Rava has the courage and the unfortunate state of having to explain to Reish Galusa why it is that what Rav Huna did to try to help. But Rava said, but I also thought I was helping, but meanwhile I was hurting. Okay. And so, and obviously the Reish Galusa was really angry. The next topic that we covered was just a small discrepancy in terms of Rabbi Eliezer of the Mishnah saying that an area shelo hukaf l'dira, so one is not restricted and can carry in that area even upwards of 30 saw one core. In the Bryce that says 40 saw, the discrepancy, the Gemara explains the discrepancy between the two, and it's based on a Kri Niksiv in Malachim Beis in the 20th Perek regarding the episode of Chizkiyahu and Yeshayahu. On the bottom of the Amud, then, we went over the difference between our Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer, for the person who's Mevatel Rishus, and the Mishnah later on, Samech Tes. Our Mishnah tells us that for Bitl HaRishus, so that means to say that for this person, he has withdrawn himself both from the Chatzar and from his home. Everybody else can carry from the Chatzar into that person's home, because that person's home now is nothing more than just simply an extension of the Chatzar. Meanwhile, the Mishnah, Samech Tes, says that nobody can carry from the Chatzar into that person's home, the person who was Mevatel Rishus. What's the difference between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim? So on the Amud Beis, we spent the entirety basically articulating that for Rabbi Eliezer, when the person is mevatel, he does so belev shalem, be'ayin yafa, and so therefore it's a full withdrawal even from his very own home. Whereas according to the sheet of the Chachamim, no, the person is not making such a magnanimous bitul. The bitul is only from the chatzar, not from his home. In terms of other nafkaminas based on this machlokus between the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer, how, when he's Mevatel Rishus, does he have to do so? Must he Mevatel Rishus to every other member? So according to the Chachamim, the answer is yes. According to Rabbi Eliezer, the answer is no. Based on this, we also ask the question, are these just simply default settings for the Chachamim, Rabbi Eliezer? Or is there a Svara Atzuma? Is there a really strong Svara in terms of why does the Chachamim feel the way they do, and Rabbi Eliezer feels the way he does? And the Gemara's conclusion is that these are just simply default settings. But if the person would like to override these default settings, both according to Rabbi Eliezer and according to the Chachamim, he may do so. And finally, we finished off by trying to identify what the type of bitter herb that Rabbi Eliezer allowed for the mitzvah of Marur. Ad Kan. It takes us to the end of the perek. Yirtzeh Hashem, tomorrow Shabbos, we begin the third perek of Eruv.